Welcome to part two of our conversation with Erin Collins about unexpected exorcisms.
I have my Bible. I was prepared as far as that goes and started reciting prayers as per June's request. And as time went on, she became more violent. I had a crucifix that I put in her hand, and I tried to hold it in her hand, but she threw my hand off of hers and chucked my crucifix across the room with such force that it dented part of the wall that it hit. I mean, woman was a tiny
woman. Is this woman like strapped down, or is she just sitting there in this chair and she's not getting up?
Yeah, she's just sitting in a chair.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not. If something like that were to happen, I probably would have told June, no, we're not going to do this. I'm not going to strap some person down in a chair.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do that.
That ends up on Dateline a lot. And the excuse of exorcism doesn't usually fly well.
No. Yeah. Sorry, officer. We were like, doing an exorcism.
Keith Morrison, they said it was an exorcism, but was it really?
Yeah. I love that guy.
Yeah. So this is going on. You find yourself in the situation saying these prayers. Surprise, you're doing an exorcism. I mean, is there any direction to this? Is there a process that you're following, or just saying prayers? And when you say she was getting violent, I know you said she threw the crucifix. What else was happening?
She was angry. And it wasn't her. I mean, I could tell it wasn't her. It was this demonic presence inside her. And the longer the prayers, Wendy and I are like prayer partners, man. We call each other prayer warriors.
Okay.
And so we were just going on and praying. And the longer we were doing that, I'm sure June told you that she has an angel inside her called Ariel.
Yeah.
Do you recall that?
I remember that. Yep.
All right. Well, she's the first one I've ever seen that her demeanor has ever changed when this angel comes out. During something like this, her whole demeanor changes, but this is different. It is so different to see someone I know and love and have known for many years. When she first told me about Ariel, I thought she was full of shit. I thought, this lady's cuckoo.
Sure.
You know, I mean, talking about Ariel, the archangel or warrior angel, whatever. And, you know, she battles demons and that's what she does. And I thought, man, she's off her meds or something.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been in paranormal a long time and I've heard everything, but she just takes the cake.
There was a lot. Yes. Yeah, when she talked, but it's like, in the show, I've talked to so many people, and you just listen and hear their story. And
yeah,
I just take everybody for their word.
Well, you know, and I do too. And then, but with her, seeing is believing. And
sure,
when all the times I've been with her and spent time with her and have seen her do this, it's still hard to understand and hard to believe. And to see her eyes change, her face change, you know, it's like she's morphed into this other angel. And this angel is the one that's removing this demon, not June.
Okay.
Certainly not me. You know, God, I invited God there. God's the one that's doing everything, not me. All I'm doing is saying prayers. And it's this angel that's doing everything, Ariel. And June is just the vessel. I'm a vessel. So is Wendy. We take no credit for anything. It's all God doing all this stuff. We were there just to help. And then after 3.5 hours, bam, you know, she seemed okay. And it seemed like I didn't feel any negativity anymore. We walked around the house, didn't find anything, didn't feel anything. I don't mean find, but I mean feel anything. No negativity. When there's something like that around, you can feel and sense that negativity. And especially with June, she can definitely feel it and sense it. And she could see it with her third eye if they're trying to hide from her. And there was nothing left. And so that was it. We were done, and that was it. She's talked to her since, and she was doing just fine.
How does this end when you're doing the exorcism session? Is it really dramatic where, I mean, I'm not saying like papers are flying around the room and the curtains are blowing in, but the energy, you know, everybody is there, they're focused. Is it like just kind of a done? Or is it like,
kind of a slow end to this where the demon kind of slowly evades or leaves?
Yeah, it was slow. It wasn't like you see on TV. There's exorcisms that can last for days, weeks, months, you know. This was different for me. I mean, I've never done anything like this before. This was the first time. I have since with June, but this was just kind of faded. And yeah, towards the end, it was like this demon just... If I told you what really happened and what really caused this demon to go, it'll be one of those, are you fucking kidding me? Excuse my language, but...
No.
Are you serious?
Tell me.
I'll just tell you what... All right, I'll tell you what happened. So I know June, I was never going to speak about this publicly, and neither was Wendy. And then June, I had her on my last podcast I had, Paranormal Crossings Into the Light, with my two co-hosts, James and Darren. And we just ended it just a couple of months ago, 2-3 months ago. But anyway, June was on and she just starts talking about it. And I'm like, I look at her and I'm like, are you serious? We weren't going to discuss this publicly, because people are going to think we're just absolutely cuckoo on top of everything else we've already talked about.
Oh, try me.
Oh, my God. So, all right. So, Tony, here it is. So we're sitting there. June's doing her thing. She's standing behind this lady. The lady's sitting in a chair. And all of a sudden, Wendy and I are sitting next to each other, just kind of observing at this point. And then June calls Lucifer and asks him to come and help. Wendy and I look at each other. I kid you not. And I thought, she's literally lost her mind.
Yeah.
And I thought, we need to get up and go. I don't know what else to do.
I'd be out the fucking door. I would not be hanging out there. I'd be like, no. Okay, you have fun with Lucifer. I hear he's a real fun guy.
Oh, my God. I kid you not. I thought there's something wrong with my friend. I really didn't understand. And Wendy and I just looked at each other and thought, we're going to have to save June now. You know,
yeah,
we have enough prayers. I mean, come on. So we got there, and I trust June. I trust her with my life. I trust her. All my kids know her. They love her. I mean, that's how much I trust her. So I just trusted her, and I kid you not, this form appears at the end of the hallway, and this person is wearing this all black suit, a black fedora hat, kind of a, I think that's the right style.
So Satan likes the fedora.
Oh, for goodness sakes. I don't know if he's just trying to appear the way I would like him to look or something. Or
you want Satan to have a fedora? Is that how you've always pictured it?
I guess. I don't know.
I always went with, like, is there holes for the horns? Or does the fedora completely cover the horns?
You know, that's a good question. I think he just kind of tucked them away somehow, you know.
Turns out he doesn't have horns. I've been wrong all this time.
I saw no horns. I saw no face. All I saw was this person in a black suit, black suit and a fedora, no face. I didn't want to look at him, to be honest. I didn't want to look him in the eyes.
I
didn't want him to say, you're coming with me. You remember this?
Yeah.
You're with me now. No, I didn't want that to happen. So I didn't pay that much attention to his face. So he walks towards us and then turns towards June, and I'm about ready to crap my pants. So's Wendy. We're holding hands at this point. We're like, we're dead. We're going to die. And all of a sudden he stops. And then this hand appears out of nowhere. This is like a movie. And this giant hand appears out of nowhere. And because June is asking for Jesus Christ. And I thought, okay, now we're at the end of the world. We're about to all die, because now we've got Satan and Jesus Christ in the same room. And so something's about to happen, obviously.
Bring Elvis. Let's have some soundtrack.
Well, we heard the toilet flush. So we knew Elvis was there somewhere. So, oh my goodness. And then Michael Jackson was going to come knocking at the door.
Oh, that would scare the shit out of me. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes, no chance. So Jesus has his hand. I'm assuming it was Jesus. I know it was, because the radiating feeling of just the goodness, the light, the warmest feeling you can feel. I mean, it's like, I'm assuming being in your mother's womb, you know, not like I can remember that, but I'm assuming. I mean,
I took TikToks that when I was down there. It was
Yeah, how was that?
Well, I mean, I'm still loading them. I took a lot of them back then.
Oh,
so,
nice.
82,
nice.
I had TikTok on my, my play phone.
That's terrible.
Mom's still uncomfortable about me sharing them.
You know, leave it to you to make it fun and not just so serious.
That's all I can
love
do.
It. I love it.
Yep.
So we're sitting there and we've got Satan on one hand, and then we have Jesus's arm stretched out. The reason for this is because this demon is she was trying to give this demon a chance. Look, dude, you have a chance. You can either go to Jesus or you can go back to Satan. Which one do you want? He absolutely would not go back to Jesus. So Satan took him. And that was that. I mean, it was like, this sounds like such total bullshit. When I was there, it felt like this was a setup. But I
know. So are you physically seeing these?
Yes.
Are you seeing just Jesus's arm coming out of, yes, a thing of light, or is he standing there?
No, all I could see was this arm, and you could see like, it's like part of a robe, and then this arm.
Just kind of coming out of something. Okay.
Glowing out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, there's no music or anything like that you would see out of a movie.
Yeah.
But out of nowhere, there's just this glowing white arm extending, like, hold my hand. And I thought, if this dude doesn't grab his hand, I will.
So is this asking the demon that's in the person to choose either? This is not asking the person to choose. This is asking the demon to choose, correct?
Demon, yeah.
And the demon said, I want to go with Satan, and then boom.
No. No, he was scared. The demon was scared to go with Jesus, and he was hiding from Satan this whole time.
So where did he go?
And so he was hiding inside this person.
No, I know, but then when he had to choose, where did he go?
Oh, Satan took him.
That's what I said. Okay, so he was scared, and then okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That, and I never say this on the show, but you're right. That does sound like a lot of bullshit.
Oh, yes, it does, and I was there. It does.
I don't think I've ever said that, ever, but I understand where you're coming from, too, going like, this sounds fucking crazy.
This is why I never wanted her to say anything in the first place. And I mean, we all three talked about it. We're like, we're not going to talk about this publicly because people will think we're just quacks, you know. And I was invited to go to this. You know, I didn't set this up. I'm not the one that asked anybody to go. And I was just there to observe and kind of help out with prayer. And she requested that somebody with, you know, ministry background come. And so I didn't expect all this. I wasn't on any type of drugs. I didn't do hallucination type of drugs or hallucinogenics. None of us do that. So for that to happen.
And you all saw the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Wow.
You got to have Wendy come on. Wendy Stanton Phillips.
Okay.
Get her take on it.
Yeah.
So she may remember things a little differently, obviously, because
she'll be like, we ordered Arby's and then those two were in the corner, like talking in tongues.
Right.
Like, I was having a roast beef sandwich.
She's like, we went over there and watched movies. What's he talking about?
And they said they saw Jesus and Satan in the room. I don't know. Maybe the horsey sauce was tainted.
Right. Exactly. We just had a big sleepover.
Yeah. Completely, yeah, slightly different. Whoa. Yes,
exactly.
Well, I mean, how often? Let me ask this. I mean, I do wonder this. Although I've talked to a lot of people, and you know, they always, you know, claim they usually, I'm sure, a lot of times, giving me the most dramatic version of whatever they have. But I do wonder if there's more of this sort of thing happening out there, where it literally is so fantastical that people have these, and it's like, yeah, I'd love to share this, but everyone's going to think we're utterly crazy. I wonder if that happens more times than not. Have you ever, you're out in that community more, far more than I am. I just have people that I talk to, you know, on my studio. But have you ever had that, or have you ever had rumblings with people where it's like, look, I know you, I trust you, I'm going to tell you this, but I'm not going to share this, you know, other than my people, where there was fantastical things like that?
Yeah, there's been lots of, well, my own kids have had things happen, but down when I was a tour guide at the Shanghai Tunnels, I
mean,
that's one of the top haunted locations in America, if not the world. And, you know, I spent a lot of time down there with other people, but by myself as well. And when other people would come down there, I'd have people come off the tour and white as a ghost. And I had no pun intended. And I would ask them, are you all right? And they just wouldn't tell me. And then their spouse would end up telling me what happened to them. And, you know, they just would not, just won't say anything, but yeah. Something just absolutely unreal, you know, would happen to them. As in like a full on apparition, speaking to them and pointing or talking grab their arm or something, mm-hmm. as they never had anything paranormal happen to them before in their lives. One particular guy told me before a tour, he's like, I don't believe any of this stuff, you know, that I don't believe in ghosts. And I said, well, you're not here for amusement. This is a historical tour, you know, and I believe in spirits. I've had countless encounters down in the tunnels. And I said, but ghosts aren't circus monkeys. They're not going to just, you know, perform because you want to see something. And I said, so this is a historical tour. If something happens, it happens. Well, I'll tell you what, when we came out, boy, he was a believer. This happened all the time. People came from all over not believing, but then they left the tunnels believing. But there's also times where people will come down for a tour and nothing happens. See, I told you there's no ghosts. I told you. Yeah. Well, again, spirits aren't going to just show up because you want them to, you know? So anyway.
Tell me a little bit more about the tunnels before we wrap up. And for those who don't know what they are.
Well, the Shanghai tunnels, I got involved because of my film and musical background. And I was asked to film music on the first Thursdays down at the Shanghai tunnel involved to help benefit awareness for human trafficking, because Shanghaiing and crimping. Crimping is the same thing as Shanghaiing, which is kidnapping of men and selling them to ship captains to work on their ships for absolutely nothing.
Which still goes on in Portland to this day, actually. It's kind of amazing.
It does. It happens everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sad. I mean, it just absolutely horrid. And the fact that it's still happening, I mean, we were huge advocates for human trafficking awareness and trying to help as many people as we could. And so every single tour, I always talked about it, always, and said at the end of the tour, it's still happening today, and there's something that you can do about it, mm-hmm. you know. And anyway, so the Shanghai tunnels, amazing place to be, because it's underneath buildings, businesses, and they were made of cobblestones. And so they would use cobblestones that were brought up with the ships. The ships would use them as ballast, and then they would toss them overboard, and then the Chinese workers would come in, and then they would use them to make the cobblestone floor for the tunnels. They have these beautiful archways. I mean, they're amazing. You can't see the cobblestone floors anymore because of how many years it's been and the floods and everything else, but they're amazing. But they used them for it's not all horrible things, but they used them for moving merchandise and things like that from the tunnels all the way down to the waterfront, to where the ships were. Well, in 1850 to 1871, they started with the crimping and Shanghaiing, which I said was the kidnapping of men and selling them to ship captains to work for them for nothing. They had these trap doors in the saloons and the bars where they would work together, the women and the bartenders. They all worked for the crimpers and the Shanghaiers. Mm-hmm. And everybody made money. So what they would do is they would find the guy they were interested in. They would give them a little bit of opium in their drinks, get them all screwed up. And then they would signal the bartender. He would pull a lever, and then the floor would open up underneath the person, and they would drop down to the Shanghaiers that were waiting for them underneath. They'd knock them out and drag them to a holding cell, and they would remove their shoes. The reason why they would remove their shoes is because they would line the tunnels outside the holding cells with broken glass, because that way, if they were to break out of the cell, then they wouldn't go far. And if they did, they would just follow the blood trail. It was pretty brutal. These guys were cramped in the cells like sardines in pitch black. I mean, the conditions were brutal. And if you survive that with the diseases and everything else and the brutality, then once you're on a ship, you may wake up. Depending on the opium, some died because they didn't know what they were doing with the opium. They would give you too much, you'd OD, and they'd toss you out. Sometimes you wouldn't wake up until you're mid-voyage out in the middle of nowhere. And you wake up, you had no idea. Last time you were in a bar drinking with your buddies.
Yeah.
You know? And so, anyway. But crimping and Shanghai didn't even enter the dictionary, the term, until 21 years later in 1871. It's just crazy. But it was going up and down, going on up and down the West Coast for so long. And anyways, everybody made money. I mean, that was the problem. That was
money. That shit still happens today with human trafficking.
Absolutely.
Because it makes money. And it's fucked up.
Yep. It's all in, you know, it was all hush, whispered in the dark. And it was all on that side of the town where Hobo's, which is the restaurant that we would go underneath to do the tours. It was that whole area of town where it was the seedy side of town. If you didn't know where you were, you did not want to venture to that side of town because you may not make it.
Sure.
Especially a young, healthy man. If you were a logger or any type of person that could handle yourself, you wouldn't make it. You were the first target. So crazy.
So what sort of experiences, and give me some of your more standout experiences that you've had down in that tunnel.
Okay. There's an area where the boots, they would, when Michael Jones, started exploring under there and digging, they found, they found boots that were the cork boots. Those are the spike boots that loggers would wear. They still do to climb the trees and all that stuff. In that area where the boots were found, I would go and do the tours in the area where the boots were found. But there's the in that same area where the holding cells were. And we would talk about how all these men were cramped like sardines and it was pitch black. I would turn off the lantern. So it was truly almost pitch black during the tour of that portion. And oftentimes I would feel my shoes being untied. And I'm like, what the heck? And I look down. Obviously, nobody's down there untying my shoes. That'd be kind of weird. And so during my tour, I would talk to people about that. And it made sense because here I was a younger, able-bodied man. And they would look at me and the spirits, I'm assuming, and would start untying my shoes. They're going to take my boots off and throw me in a holding cell. And so I decided to stop wearing shoes that have laces or I double tie them. And because oftentimes I would wear boots down there. And so I would say that to people on the tour. Well, other people started noticing on tours that their shoes were being untied before I even said anything.
Yeah.
And and so I started incorporating that in my tours all the time because it was happening so much. So that's one thing that happened. There's another part where I can't remember at the moment. It's been since 2017 since I've done the tours, but there's this one, I call it a box, but there's a term for it where they would put women in to break her. And I mean, it's the most emotional part of the tour, in my opinion. Grown men, I'm talking guys, 6'5", 6'6", biker guys, no joke. When I would do this portion of the tour, some of them would have to walk away and not look, and some of them would burst out crying because it's where they would put women to break them and have them submit so they would become their property and prostitutes. And it was no bigger than a small closet. They had one chair and closet, and that's where these men would break these women. And it was so negative, and you could just feel it. And when you're empathetic like I am, when you have that type of gift, I guess,
sure.
Oh my gosh, it just affected me emotionally a lot. I had to turn that off to do the tour. Otherwise, it'd be a sobby mess all the time.
Yeah.
But it affected so many people, men, women, children, didn't matter. If you're human, it affected you. And so it was terrible, that part of it. But then there's the historical part of the tour that you know, people enjoyed. Lots of spirits, though, man. Let me tell you, so many spirits. I had my name whispered, called. I've been touched. One quick, do you have time for one more story?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. There's a boxer by the name of Mysterious Billy Smith. And he was today, back in those days, he was like today's Mike Tyson. he was a short dude. He was only 5'6". He wasn't that big, but he was just a strategic type of boxer. But we're talking bare knuckle boxing, not in the ring today. This was underground. And so he had a bad reputation. He had a reputation of being a good boxer, but then again, he had a bad reputation of being a nasty boxer. He would literally bite the ear off his opponent, which he did at one point.
Oh, that's where Mike got it.
Exactly.
He wasn't the first one.
Exactly. And this guy would literally practice with a bear.
Oh, my God.
He literally would go up to Rhododendron here in Oregon, up on Mount Hood, and they put him in a pit with a bear to practice. And so, anyways, that's how this guy was. Well, he ended up being a Shanghaier at one point. And he was nasty as a Shanghaier. When he didn't have enough guys in his holding cells, he would go and steal the guys from somebody else's cell and drag them to his cells. I mean, that's just the kind of person he was. He was just mean and nasty. So I'm sitting there. I had just done a tour. I had these two sisters, great, great girls. They were my tour assistants that night. And one of the girls who is a main tour guide has been there way before I had ever been there. And so she was going to teach me the Halloween tours because Halloween was coming up soon at that point. And so we were sitting down there near the place in between the boot section and the section where the girls were spirits were broken. And I'm sitting on the bench and there's nothing but a wall behind me. And the girls were sitting on the bench next to me. I think one was to my left, one was to my right. Cindy was in front of me, giving me the spiel about the whole Halloween tour because it's slightly different. And anyway, so she's talking and talking and talking, and then talking about Mysterious Billy Smith because we incorporate that with the Halloween tour. And as she's talking about him, all of a sudden a hand grabs my right shoulder and squeezes, but it happened so hard and so fast that I screamed and I jumped up and leaped up off the bench. I mean, there's nobody that could have grabbed me. There's nobody there.
Yeah.
It's just the two girls and a wall behind me. And normally when I'm grabbed down in the tunnels and which happened all the time, it wasn't that aggressive, but this time I believe that it was a Mysterious Billy Smith wanting to grab me and put me in a holding cell. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I can't say for sure. Obviously, I didn't see an apparition. Nobody saw anything.
Sure.
I just know what I felt, and it jolted me off that bench so fast, it scared the living heebie-jeebies out of me.
I wonder if the spirits of these people that are down there, you know, that they, it just seems when people are kind of doing the same thing over and over, and not necessarily, I'm not talking residual, I'm talking like, they're still doing their shit, like, or they think they're doing their shit. And I can imagine if they're hearing you or whatever they're perceiving as you telling everybody about what's happening down there, that probably strikes them as no, we don't want to have this information out there.
It could be.
And that I think would probably aggravate them because you're sharing what their ills are, what they're doing. But
that could be.
What a fascinating place.
What it is, it's so sad that it closed down. Michael Jones passed away a couple of years ago. You know, it's just the whole thing is just sad. Because of the pandemic, it screwed everything and in so many ways. And no disrespect to people who lost their lives and have battled, you know, this pandemic, you know, head on. But as far as the tunnels go, yeah, they had to shut it down. And I spent so much time down there by myself. The way I deal with people and in spirits is I treat people and spirits the way I want to be treated in life, you know, with respect. I treat people that way. And the same way with spirits. My kids, two of my kids would go down there with me as assistant guides. They assisted me on the tours, but I could not for the life of me get them to go and open up downstairs to get the lanterns turned on and do all this stuff because they were scared to death.
Yeah.
Because of the spirits. They would talk to them. They would say stuff to them. And I told them time after time, I said, look, these were people at one time. Mm-hmm. And I said, all you got to do is go down and talk to them. I'm not talking to them, Dad. I'm not like you. I'm like, because I go down there and say, you know, good morning or good afternoon, everyone. It's Aaron. You know, yeah. I'm just here to do the tour today. How are you doing? Anyways, and I would go through my thing every single time I go down there because it was important.
Yeah.
And because of that, nobody bothered me in a negative way. You know, other than mysterious Billy Smith, I did that one time, but that was the worst it got. Other than that, I got talked to all the time. I've gotten touched, you know, on numerous occasions. I mean, we're talking a year that I did the tours, sometimes up 5 days a week. It just depended. So I went through so much down there. But the point is treat people and spirits the way you want to be treated, with respect. That's what you all have to do. And that's what I do with, and I talk to my team about doing the same thing. It's all about respect.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Aaron Collins. A big thank you to him for sharing his experiences with us on today's episode. And thank you to you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.